So the last 2 weeks, we had talked about the Upanishads and the Vedas. The Vedas are the spiritual textbooks, which are four. And the Upanishad, which we will be studying, is the end portion of the Vedas, the knowledge portion. And just to summarize, most scriptures have the first portion called Dharma, or do's and don'ts, where we need to practice the right thing, do the right thing. And we were talking to a teenager and some teenagers, and one of them said, well, scriptures tell us, you know, get up in the morning, do your studies, pray, meditate, exercise. Why don't they tell us, you know, sleep late, eat ice cream, eat pizza, have fun, go to parties, stay up? No, because those things take us downwards. When you enjoy, you know, do whatever your mind feels like doing, enjoying sense pleasures. So that's why scriptures tell us what is the right thing to do and how that will take us upward. Plus, doing the right karmas, doing the right actions, also not only improves this life, but also improves future lives, you know, the next life. And people say, well, how do you know that there is a next life? How do you, we don't believe in, you know, we don't remember our past life. Well, it's very simple. They say that the actions of this life will determine what kind of body you get in the next life, what kind of family you get, how your mind will be, how your circumstances will be. They say, well, what is the proof of that? The proof of that is the fairness of the Almighty Lord. He cannot sit up there somewhere and then decide, okay, this child is being born, I'm going to make him very intelligent. Another one, I'm going to give him Down syndrome and make him mentally challenged. This one, I'm going to make him healthy. And then this one is going to have all kind of congenital diseases, bad heart, bad lung. He would not do that. Or this child will be born in a nice family where the children will, you know, will be loved by the parents and well educated, and this other child, you know, he'll be born in a family where the mother is on drugs, father is in jail, uncle will abuse him. All these things that we see, the variety of situations, are all because of karmas. Whatever we are going through, even a child, you say child has not done any karmas, that is true. But we have to understand that it is our karmas that determine not only this life and multiple lifetimes to come. I won't go into details about reincarnation, there is so much, but just to briefly mention why we should practice the right actions. And then the second portion of the scriptures, Vedas, talks about upasana, which we had dealt in detail in the last 2 weeks. Talks about worship and meditation. The more you meditate, the more you worship God, the more you remember, the more you develop the same divine qualities that are in this divinity. Just as the more time you spend studying basketball, the better basketball player you become. The more time you spend with computers, you know, the smarter you will be in computers. The more time you, you know, spend in the stock market, you know, wherever you put your effort, that's what you will get. So worship and remembering God and meditation takes us closer to the Lord and makes our mind pure. Swami Chinmayananda, our founder, once said, turn your mind in devotion to the Lord. He will purify it and return it back to you. And the Lord, it doesn't matter what name, what form, you know, which building, whether a church or a temple, which book, whether Bible or Quran or Gita, in which language, it doesn't matter. Just remember God, and that's all. You mean form, formless, doesn't matter. As long as you remember this higher entity who is not only everywhere, but also in me as life. And that one has to constantly, whenever you talk about God or Brahman or consciousness, immediately say, that is me, that is within me, that is not something outside. Everything is Him, and I am also. That Om is, that's why, represents me, that consciousness that is within me. And that brings us to the third portion called the Upanishads, which talks about who am I. And as we have talked many times, but this script Upanishad will go into a lot more detail about who am I really. And we have talked about it many times. I'm not this body. I'm not this mind. I'm not this intellect. They are my equipment. I am that consciousness. So this Upanishad will teach us how to abide in this knowledge. Here we hear it very well. Okay, I know I am not this body. But the moment we go out, that knowledge disappears. The moment some physical pain comes or some emotional sorrow comes or some failure comes, my mind gets disturbed. So how can I constantly abide in that spiritual knowledge that I am that? That we will be learning in the next few months as we go through this Upanishad in a lot of detail, because the second half of this Upanishad just devotes to who am I. And even though we have heard it, but abiding in it is very difficult. I myself, you know, have been reading and listening for 25 years at least, but still that firm abidance is not there. So constant learning, repetition helps us to go beyond the worldly sorrows. And that is the benefit of this knowledge, that it takes me beyond sorrow, takes me beyond grief to that highest immortal nature of mind, where I can remain happy and balanced irrespective of what is happening around me. And that is the reason we study the Upanishads. The other thing is that it is not worldly knowledge. People say, well, by studying the scriptures, will I, you know, be more successful in my job? No. Yes, it will make your mind calmer, where you will be able to do your job better. But will I, you know, make more money in the stock market? No. Will I become a better golfer? Maybe. You know, if your mind is calm, if your mind is balanced, and you might be able to. But this knowledge is not for worldly knowledge. It's not to make myself more rich, more successful, more famous. It is to grow within. The main purpose is to grow within. It's not going to make me a better piano player. You know, people actually, I do these procedures on patients. We do these scopes. And so I was going to do a scope on this man. And before he started the procedure, he says, "Doc, when I wake up from this procedure, will I be able to play the piano?" So I said, "Of course, you know, of course." He said, "That's funny, I couldn't play the piano before." He got me there. So it's not going to teach me how to play the piano, but it's going to make me happier. It's going to make me more peaceful. It's going to make me more self-centered. And for that, one has to make the mind subtle. Because our mind at this moment is all the time engrossed in gross things. What am I going to eat? What am I going to wear? And then what is she wearing? And what kind of house does she have? And what is he doing? And all the time, you know, parties. And our mind is all the time engrossed in the world. You know, how can I go shopping? What can I buy? What is new? What is on sale in the mall? All the time we open the newspaper and look at those things. But what we have to do is, yeah, we have to function in the world. I'm not saying that you don't deal with people, but devote less energy to worldly things and devote more time to spiritual matters, to going within, because that is ultimately the only goal of life, is to evolve spiritually, to know who I am. And that can happen only when the mind is subtle, when it's not attached to gross things of the world, but attached to who am I, attached to more subtle things in life, like love, compassion, kindness, divinity, you know, sharing. When these subtle things come, then such a mind that has been made subtle by the right knowledge only can acquire this spiritual knowledge. So they say, make your mind subtle. And when your mind is subtle, when your mind is centered on the Lord, then in your meditation, you will go deep inward, and that's when the knowledge will finally dawn on you. You may read the books, which is good. You may listen to the discourses, But ultimately, what is needed is self-knowledge, knowledge of who I am. The books can only guide you. It is you yourself who has to make that journey within. And that's what they say, the life's journey is not outward, it is inward. And go inward and discover your true nature. So that is the goal of life. Our scriptures tell us that human beings have four goals in life. The two main in the middle are wealth and sense pleasures. Wealth and sense pleasures. And all of us in life spend our whole life in acquiring these two, wealth and sense pleasures. And people think, as long as I have all the fun, I have, you know, everything is okay, then why do I have to go towards spirituality? My life is going fine. I have enough money. I am enjoying life. I am eating, drinking, you know, I am living comfortably. But think about it. To enjoy sense pleasures, first of all, you need wealth, right? If you don't have money, you can't enjoy. But say you have money and you want to eat food, but your body is not healthy, your stomach cannot digest, or you have diabetes, a doctor says you can't have sugar. Food is there, money is there, but I can't enjoy my life. Okay, health is there, food is there, money is there, you know, everything is ready, you're ready to enjoy the food. And some bad news comes, you know, somebody died, or somebody said something to me, or somebody insulted me, or somebody was very rude. The best food you have, you know, five or six dishes, a six course meal. But if my mind is upset, my mind is stressed, I have all the money, I have a healthy body, I have all the food, I can't enjoy that. So sense pleasures and wealth can only be enjoyed, two things. One is they should be acquired by dharma, by righteousness. So when I am enjoying my sense pleasures and when I am enjoying my wealth, they should be acquired by right means, by doing the right thing, by honest living, by hard work. But if you have cheated somebody, or if you have lied, or if you have done something wrong, then neither the wealth will benefit you, nor will you get the sense pleasures. Your mind will always be disturbed. And with a disturbed mind, you can't enjoy that. So that's what they say, that do things the right way, as the scriptures tell you, and then only you can enjoy wealth and you can enjoy sense pleasures. But the final goal of life, these are the four goals, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Moksha is liberation. Final goal, the most important goal that we have in our life is liberation. I need to be liberated. What do we mean by liberated? They say, I am liberated. I am living in a free country. I can vote for whoever I want. I can, you know, practice whatever religion I want. I can live wherever I want in this country. I can, you know, get up on in the newspaper or in the mic and criticize the president. So they say liberation is not freedom as we see it, which is good. I mean, to live in a free country is good. But liberation is to be free of the bondage of artha and kama, wealth and the sense pleasures. Right now, we are so dependent on the world to give me happiness, the world to, if I have money, I'm happy. If I don't have money, I'm miserable. If I'm enjoying life, it is good. If I'm not. But a saint or a liberated individual is one who, if things are there, he can enjoy. If things are not there, he's still fine. He's still fine. The ability to be fine and to be free of the bondages, because at this time we are so bound with the world. The world has so much caught us. Our family, our work, our possessions, we are so caught up. And anything goes wrong, my mind gets disturbed. But the ability to be remain detached, it does not mean I don't love. I love people, but I do not depend on people for my happiness. And also I do not depend on objects, because I have discovered the truth. That is true moksha, that is true liberation. And that is another thing that we will learn in this particular text. How to be free of worldly bondages and worldly problems. The reason I'm giving this introduction is because this Upanishad is a very subtle subject, and the book itself does not talk about all these things. it straight away goes into the subject matter and there is no beating around the bush. But having this background, we spent three talks, last two and this one, prepares our mind for study. It is like the foundation. You have to lay a foundation before you can build a building. If you straight away start making a building without a strong foundation, the building will collapse. So studying the Upanishads without the right foundation will make your knowledge collapse. So that is the reason we have spent three talks. And next week, I promise, we will start this Upanishad. So, so all of you have been bringing your books, but next week, definitely, we will start. Then we talk about who is qualified to study this Upanishads. Who is qualified? I have to look at these qualities and say, do I have them? Then only I am qualified. If they say, I don't have, maybe out of, you know, nine, I have only three. You don't have to be discouraged. The fact is that these are the qualities that I need to develop within myself before I'm qualified, just as before you do PhD. They say, well, you can't straight away go from high school to a PhD class and say, you know, I want to do a PhD in, you know, quantum physics. No, they say you do bachelor's, you do master's, and then you come for PhD. So similarly, to study these Upanishads, these are the qualities I need to develop in me. And let us see how many of these we have. Viveka means discrimination. Discrimination does not mean a discrimination of color, which is what we normally understand. When they say here discrimination, the ability to discriminate between what is right, what is wrong, what is true, what is false, what is real, what is unreal, what is divine, what is worldly. Because in this world, we think the world is real, and we think God is unreal. He's somewhere there, maybe, you know, behind the clouds, or maybe somewhere hidden, and I'm not sure even if he's there. Maybe he is. Yeah, the books say maybe. But what is real? Is the world real, or is God real? And that is what we shall study in this Upanishad. That is this real, what am I seeing, or is there a higher reality on which this world is projected? That's what they say, the world is a projection. It is an appearance, it is a projection upon that reality. And so what is the nature of that reality and what is the nature of the world? That discrimination we need to have, or at least the desire to learn about it. Then vairagya or dispassion. Having some degree of detachment is very essential for a spiritual seeker. I cannot be excessively attached. Again, it does not mean I don't love, you know, my family, I have to have a house and things. But excessive attachment or dependence on anything will definitely take you downward. That's why when somebody asked, you know, they say ask in real estate, what is the three most important things in real estate? Somebody said location, location, location. Right? Those are the three most important things in real estate. So similarly, what are the three most important things in spirituality? Dispassion, dispassion, dispassion. The ability to detach is absolutely essential for a spiritual seeker. And so our founder, Swami Chinmayananda, said, the more you are attached to Lord, automatically the world will fall off. Turn your mind towards the Lord, attach to Him, and the world will detach automatically. The closer you are to the Lord, the further you will go from the world. And the third one is Shat Sampatti. Again, this is a very lengthy subject, but I am very briefly going over what are the six qualities of a spiritual seeker. It is described in many of the books, and if you're interested, I can let you know. There are a lot of the basic textbooks in the library, in our bookstore, which talk about it. But there are six qualities: control of the mind, control of the body and senses, then forbearance, the ability to withstand the life's pinpricks, because life is never going to be perfect. I'm always going to have some small or big problems, maybe a backache, maybe knee problem, maybe emotional problems, maybe stress, maybe anything, weather, you know, there will always be some difficulty, loss of a job, you know, loss of a family member. So the ability to bear life's pinpricks is very essential. Then is withdrawal. I must, as I said, withdraw from the world. Spend less time in the world. I'm not saying that you totally pick up, put on orange robes or put on a priest's habit and go to a church or a temple or the monk, but slowly detach from the world and turn to the higher. If I have extra time, instead of wasting it on watching TV or watching a movie or watching the evening news, you know, read some good books, maybe some time in meditation or prayer or in service. So withdraw from the world and turn to the higher. Then faith. Faith in the scriptures, faith in the teacher, faith in God, and faith in my abilities. Just as all these great saints, they came as ordinary human beings. Look at Jesus, look at Buddha, he was a prince. Jesus was an ordinary carpenter. So many of our Swami Chinmayananda, the founder, was a journalist. They all started life as ordinary human beings, but when they turned their mind to the higher, how they were able to evolve. So I can also do that. So have faith in yourself, invoke the Lord's grace. And then the last one is equanimity, the ability to remain balanced and the ability to focus my mind. Focus of the mind is very, very important. When I am sitting and studying or when I am reading or when I am listening, my mind should be totally focused, should not wander, and then only knowledge will come. So once I have these, then I develop an intense desire for liberation, a desire for change. I have had enough. I've spent 30, 40, 50, 60 years in the world, but now it is enough. Now I want to be free. And I want to go higher. So the desire to change is very important. I have been living my life all along, but I am tired of that and I want to. Talking about change, there was a monk who, you know, used to give talks on Vedanta lectures like these. And so one day he goes to a pizza store and a pizza parlor and he orders a pizza. So the pizza was $12. So he gives $20. To the owner or to the sales clerk. And the sales clerk also knew some Vedanta, had been listening to the lectures. So he gives him $20 and the pizza was $12 and he's waiting and the clerk doesn't do anything. So he says, "Where is my change?" So he says, "Sir, change comes from within." He had given him a little bit of his lecture back. So that is true. Change only comes from within. The books can help you. But ultimately, unless you resolve that you are going to change, then change can come only from within, because the Lord is within us. And abiding in that truth, when you are stationed, established in the truth, then the change can come. And the last topic we'll very briefly talk about, but again, this book will go into a lot more detail, about something called Brahman. Brahman, as we had talked last week, means big. So Brahman represents the unmanifest, formless God. You can call it God, you can call it consciousness. It is the substratum, it is the support of this entire creation. So there are many qualities of Brahman, but two we shall talk about. One is, it is the force behind all activities. So within me, Brahman is represented as Om, as life, as consciousness. And it is that which is behind all activities. That is what makes the plants grow. That's what makes the animals move, and the fish swim. That's what makes me think, you know, it can make me think, make me feel. Make me see, hear, smell, taste, touch, walk, talk. So it is the force behind all my activities and force behind all activities everywhere in the universe, whatever it is happening. Even the spacecraft that went to Pluto, where did that energy come from? Plutonium. You know, it has a nuclear powered engine. And where did that energy come from? The Lord himself, because he's the one that created this radioactive materials. Which, of course, the brilliant scientists, you know, they did so many trillion miles away after 9 years. It's a great, you know, wonderful feat. But the intelligence that the scientists had, they can say, oh, we did it and we are great. But they all at this, immediately they have to turn their attention. Oh, thank God, it is His power, His grace that gave us the ability to achieve this most wonderful feat. It is amazing that after 9 years of travel, so many trillion miles away, it takes such beautiful pictures, and it is still going. It might go for another so many years. So remembering that there is one force behind all activities, it is making the sun station, the earth revolve around the sun, the moon move, the, you know, whatever is happening, the comets, all that, the birds chirping. So constantly, whenever you see anything like that happening, for the last 2 days since I've been seeing this Pluto, it's made me so more appreciative of how mighty that Lord is. Because it took us 9 years to reach Pluto, and that is only one galaxy. It's just this, not even one galaxy, it's one star with its 9 planets. And there are billions of stars like this in the whole universe, billions of galaxies. They say there are more stars in the universe than there are grains of sand on the beach. How many grains of sand are there on the beach? There are more stars than that. And each one of the stars has so many Plutos and so many planets. It's such a beautiful world we live in. So remember the Lord all the time. Whenever you see anything beautiful like that happen, see that there is a Lord behind that. And secondly, the Lord is the source of all creation. Brahman is the substratum, the support on which this world was created. The world emerged from him or her or it. Actually, Brahman in Sanskrit is neuter. It is neither male nor female. That's why they say God is neither male nor female. It is the energy, the substratum, the support. It is the consciousness on which this whole world was. It came out from that consciousness, is sustained by that consciousness. And at the end of the creation, after a few billion years, it will merge back. So all that will be studied by us in this beautiful text. So whatever I have talked today is just an introduction. I thought I'd give a little more background of why we are studying this Upanishad and what is the goal and purpose. What are we hoping to achieve? So that's why I thought from next week, we will be starting the first mantra called the Shanti Path, which is the peace invocation. Which will Om Bhadram Karnebhi Shrunuyam Deva. So that will be done next week. So please bring your books. If those who don't have, I still have some books for sale. It's $5, so you can take it. And any comments, any questions? Any points or agree with, disagree?
But the inside is very...
Right. So that's the idea, you know, that to, you know, look at these qualities and see how many do I have. And if I don't have them, if I have them partially, how can I develop them? If I don't have some of these, it does not mean that I should stop coming or not stop reading or studying, because as I study, as I meditate, as I practice, slowly these qualities will come. But my goal has to be clear, and that is even our Swami Tejomayananda, the head of the mission who came 2 weeks ago, always used to say, have a higher goal, have a higher goal. My goal is higher. It is not just to eat, drink, be merry, have children, get old and die. You know, even animals do that. Sparrows do that. Even, you know, dogs do that. But is my goal higher? And have a higher goal in life. Not just make money, have a big house, and then that's it. I mean, those are all necessary, but that's not my main goal. So make a higher goal, and then automatically these qualities will come. Once you make a goal and then you say, yes, this particular activity is interfering, then I'll automatically stop spending time. You know, I need to study more. I need to, you know, practice more meditation. But this activity is interfering. I'll just drop it. You know, this particular friends, they are my an interference. I'll just drop them. I'll associate with people who know who are studying, who are spiritual. So make your goal higher, just as a person whose goal is, you know, to become, to go to medical school or law for 10, 15, 20 years, that's all they do. You know, they're morning to evening, they're studying law, they're going to law school, they're even when they start that practice, you know, they work 16 hours a day, 12 hours, 14 hours a day. In the beginning, lawyers work very hard. Same way, you know, doctors, you know, interns and residents, how hard they all work, even physicians. Why? Because their goal is higher. The goal is not, otherwise, you know, if you just as a young kid, if you're just playing Nintendo or, you know, games, and, you know, then you will be an, if you want to be successful, you have to, or a person whose goal is freedom for the country, you know, and the country is occupied by foreign, you know, like George Washington and all those who fought for freedom for the United States, or in India, those who fought for freedom from the British. Then for their freedom, they're ready to sacrifice anything. You see, for the future of my country, for my country to be free, I'm ready to sacrifice even my life. So when the goal is higher, then the person is willing to sacrifice everything. So similarly, when my goal is spiritual growth, then automatically those qualities will come. Dispassion, control of the mind, body, you know, desire for liberation. All come if my goal is higher. Yes?
I think it's, to me, it seems, and that's where discrimination comes in. Sometimes people lose their way.
Right.
So it just, to me, it seems really complicated.
True, it's not easy. But what they're saying is that to achieve success, God says, I ask for 100%. I ask for everything. You can't go to him halfway. You can't say physically I'll be praying, but my mind will be in Las Vegas, you know, or my body is in the church or temple, but I'm thinking when I'm there, I have to be 100% there. So God says in the Bible, he says, I ask for nothing but everything, right? There's some statement like that. Doesn't it say I ask for everything? No, there is a statement in the Bible. Somebody has told me, he says, I ask for 100%. I mean, some equivalent, there is a statement. So the point is that you cannot be half-hearted. If you want to be a successful in anything, you have to do 100. You want to be an Olympic athlete. You cannot say, I'll just practice on Sundays. You know, I'll run 100 meters on Sundays and other 6 days I'll eat, drink and enjoy. Like, no, for next 8 years, I'm going to, that is my goal. I'll sacrifice everything to win the Olympics. If you want to climb Mount Everest, how many years of hard work it takes. But people think for spirituality, that it can be a part-time activity. It's okay, you know, Sunday I go to church. God, see, I went on church on Sunday. Are you happy? Yes. God is happy, I'm happy. The rest of the week I can do whatever I want. No, it has to be 100% commitment. Spirituality needs a lot more than winning the Olympics. Or I'm not saying, it's not meant to discourage. The point is that that has to become the number one goal in your life. Just as a person going to medical school doesn't say, if I pass, it's okay. You know, if I don't pass, so what? You know, no, I have to pass, so I have to get my medical degree. You know, a person, anything, you know, person starting a new business. He doesn't say, oh, let me go 1 hour, 2 hours, and rest of the time I'll play golf. No, 7 days a week, even Sundays, Saturdays, he's out there working, checking. So when we put so much effort in the worldly activities, and then for spirituality, we say, oh, we don't need to do that. That's what we meant. There should be an intense total commitment to this cause. And slowly the direction of my mind has to turn in that direction, where that becomes the number one goal in my life. I still do my activities, but I do them as a service of God. I think on Sunday we spoke in the church, the Center for Spiritual Studies, about that. About karma yoga, doing activities dedicated to the Lord. But why? Because I want to reach that highest goal.
Some sort of preparation.
True. Yes. Because life is a gradual series of progressions. But doesn't matter whether I have it on my past life or not. Now I know that is my goal. At least from today, let me decide that that is going to be my goal. So once a man resolves, once a person resolves, this is my goal, then she can put her. So that's what we meant. In fact, there's a story about this intense desire for liberation. I'll just very briefly mention the story. Vivekananda was a great, you know, saint who was the first one to bring Vedanta to the US in 1890. Very evolved soul. He was also did a lot of yoga and was very strong. So this is a true story. This student came to him. He said, I want to know God, but I don't know. I don't find time. You know, I'm too busy, you know, but I want to know God. So how do you think I can do that? You know, I go to temple, I do pray a little bit, I read, but you know, how do I? So he said, okay, let's, it was early morning. So in those days, they didn't have running water. They used to go to the river to take a bath. So they said, come on, let's go to the river. Have you had a bath? He said, no, let's go early morning. We'll walk to the river, take a bath and come back. So they go to the river and they, you know, both dip their head in the water to take a bath. And this Vivekananda, this was very strong. He was a monk, but very strong. So he caught that guy's head and pushed it under the water. And he couldn't come out. And he was struggling and he couldn't come out. And he was kept his head down. And he thought, I'm going to die. What is, I thought this guy was a monk and he's going to kill me or what? He was dying. He almost, finally, when he couldn't take it anymore, he was, and then he released him. Ah, he came out. And he was so angry. He says, Guru, I came to you for advice and you're trying to kill me. What kind of a teacher are you? He started cursing him. So he listened to him for a while. He said, okay, tell me one thing. When your head was under the water, what were you thinking? Were you thinking about your wife, your children, your money, your dog, your horse, your business? No, he said, no, all I was thinking was breath. I want to breathe. I want to breathe. I wasn't thinking about my wife, my children, my dog, my cat, my money, my business. All I wanted to was breathe. He says, yeah, that is how much desire you should have for God. All I want is Him. That intense desire that you had for breath underwater, that desire when you get, then you will get Him. It's not a part-time activity. Don't think that it will just happen just like that. You know, He's just waiting on the street corner. I'll just go and say, hi, God, how are you? And no, it needs time, it needs effort, it needs commitment. So that is the meaning of intense desire for liberation. Just as that person, he had intense desire for breath. He said, that much? Do you have that much desire for God? Then you will get Him. So that's a true story. And so his idea was to teach him, you know, that you cannot just be casual about this. I'm not trying to scare people. It's not that, you know, it's something that you can't achieve. But we have to resolve. We have to make a resolution. That is the idea. Last time we had talked about 12 years. Remember, it's a 12-year activity. Yeah. It's not going to happen in 6 months or 1 month. It's not going to happen with one class. You know.
12 years.
Yeah. It doesn't. I've been doing it for 25 years. I'm still there. I haven't.
I know. I've been more than 5 years.
Yeah, you have been coming more than 5 years.
More than 5 years.